This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
No undercard tonight. Rempe and McDermott, the main event to open the hockey game.
Both sides. Lazar went the other side as well.
Jimmy Vesey and Lazar. Gaudreau has dropped them with Kevin Ball as well. Now it's 5-on-5. McDermott and Rempe exchanging blows. But everybody has gloves off at the Garden.
Okay, everybody with gloves off at the Garden last night. Oh, by the way, there was a game. The Rangers beat the New Jersey Devils 4-3. Chris Kreider with a power play goal gives the Rangers the 4-3 win in this one. Artemi Panarin, Alexi Lafreniere, both with a pair of points in this one. And no one cares about any of that because it was fight night at the Garden last night. We all expected, as we mentioned on the program yesterday and talked about it rather extensively, Curtis McDermott facing off against Matt Rempe. We got that, and we got a whole lot more as well. Before we start to drill down on this one, what we saw last night, Elliot Friedman stops by here in a couple of moments. Let's hear from the coaches, who themselves almost came to blows as well. Always good to see coaches barking back and forth. You old school fans will think about, oh, John Brophy and Jacques Demers. Newer school fans might think about Bruce Boudreau and Patrick Waugh. But last night was Travis Green and Peter Laviolette as the coaches' sideshow. Let's start first with the interim bench boss for the New Jersey Devils. After the game, here is Travis Green.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Obviously, there's five fights to start the game. I don't know if anyone was expecting that. It's an emotional game. As far as Peter and I go, I look over and he's yelling, talking to me, and I'm more than willing to go and talk to him. And I have no idea why Peter was mad. I mean, to be honest, for two reasons. For starters, their players were lining up fights before the face-off, and none of this would have happened. Which we all know why it did happen tonight. None of it would have happened if something happened the game before, which was obvious that, that they didn't want it to happen that game. So I have no idea why Peter would have been upset. And again, it's not on me why he's upset.
We also do have to throw in John Tortorella and Bob Hartley in the Calgary-Vancouver game as well. Okay, so that is Travis Green, and one of the more interesting points there, saying, oh, it was the Rangers that were setting up all the extracurriculars, and, none of this would have happened if Matt Rempe just would have, gone about the traditional business of fighting Curtis McDermott. The last time they met, that would have been after the Jonas Siegenthaler hits. Okay, so there's Travis Green. Let's hear from his counterpart on the New York Rangers bench. Here's Peter Laviolette.
What angered you so much that you responded the way you do on the bench?
I think it's probably just emotions more than anything, coaches, players, whatever. There's obviously a little bit between the two teams, and, it's just, I think the emotions get in there.
Does it tell you anything?
How's that for vague?
That might have been the best takeaway from all of last night and all the post-game comments. How's that for vague? Peter Laviolette, head coach of the New York Rangers. Look, we all knew what the score was going into this one, right? And we all expect, as soon as we saw the New Jersey Devils starting lineup and the visitors submit their lineup first and then the home team responds, we all knew that, okay, Curtis McDermott is starting off. We expect very much that the Rangers will answer with Matt Rempe. They'll be right beside each other. What we didn't expect was what we saw, and that was a full-on line brawl. Now, these things don't happen very often, as we well know. I did reference, John Tortorella and Bob Hartley in Vancouver, Calgary. We also saw the Rangers and the Washington Capitals a couple of seasons ago. This is coming off the Tom Wilson situation with Artemi Panarin. So it doesn't happen very often, but the takes online after this one. And we'll get into the Rangers and the Devils here in a couple of moments. Sean Reynolds coming up at the bottom of the hour from the NHL on Sportsnet, covering the Winnipeg Jets. A huge win earlier this week against the Los Angeles Kings. Cole Perfetti front and center in that game. Craig Berube, no stranger to to Rough Hockey himself, former NHL head coach and Stanley Cup champion. We'll stop by an hour or two as well. In the meantime, we'll kick it off with someone who, along with Michael Grange, has a really interesting story on Keith Pelley, and we're going to get to that in a couple of moments. He's Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and 32 Thoughts. Hello, Freege.
Hey, Jeff. How you doing, bud?
I'm good. I want to get to the piece that you wrote with Grange here in a couple of seconds. Like, you and I have talked about it a little bit on the podcast and a little bit here as well. And you and Grange really go in depth now on, you know, what the future of MLSE is now with Keith Pelley at the helm. But before we get there, a few things from last night, starting with Madison Square Garden, starting with Rempe and McDermott, which continued and turned into Ball and Marino and Chris Cherney and Jacob Trouba and Keandre Miller and Barclay Gaudreau. And then, you know, next thing we know, there were a couple of more scraps. Eventually, they settled in and played a hockey game. But, you know, Travis Green, I thought, made an interesting comment by saying none of this would have happened if they just would have sorted it out during the last game. As we know, Matt Rempe was under orders not to fight. How did you see everything last night? Like, was all of this inevitable?
Yes, it was like Thanos. It was inevitable, Jeff. It was it was going to happen one way or the other. Now, I understand. Like, the thing about the Devils, like, I understand how upset they were about last time, but I think the Rangers did the right thing there. Like, in all of this Matt Rempe talk, one of the things that, you know, I know that you and I have discussed, I know other people have discussed, is that, you know, normally if you're a guy like that and you do that role in the NHL, you know how to do it. You know, you've done it before, you fought before, or you've been in a situation where this is kind of like a habit to you. At least it used to be, but now, because, you know, for obvious reasons, they've cut back on fighting at a lot of lower levels. This was a player who showed up in the NHL not knowing how to protect himself. And if for all of the positive publicity he was getting, there were a lot of people, I know you and I talked about it, John Scott was public about it too, about how, wait a sec, you know, this guy doesn't know how to protect himself. He's leading with his face, and this is going to end really badly. And the Rangers got a hold on that and kind of realized it. So while the Devils may have been mad, the Rangers did the right thing, I believe, in that last game. Now, eventually we were going to get here. And last night we got here, and, you know, I don't know why anybody should be surprised considering some of the personalities involved. You know, Laviolette has never been afraid of this kind of thing. Travis Green, while he wasn't like a fighter per se, he fought. He was a tough player. And, you know, I don't see how anybody could have expected anything different last night. I mean, the thing that was actually kind of funny to me, Jeff, was I was off the draw watching Gaudreau. He's like, no, not you. That's when you know that there's been a bit of conversation about what's going to happen here.
You see, the way, and I thought about this, I mean, no surprise to you, I thought about this a lot last night after the game, and the one thing that I kept coming back to is, you know, and Travis Green hinted at this, none of this would have happened if this, you know, the guys just would have fought and got it over with last game. And I think to myself, okay, well, let's just say there was only the fight, Curtis McDermott and Matt Rempe last night, and there wasn't the line brawl. And then subsequent, you know, Dawson Mercer got into it later as well with Will Cooley. But if there wasn't all of that, and there was only Matt Rempe and Curtis McDermott, which I kind of thought that it was going to be. And when we saw Travis Green submit his opening lineup, I thought, okay, they're going to get this over with right away, and then they're just going to move on, and they're just going to play the game. So the line brawl starts. And then there's sort of the fumes, and I mentioned, you know, Mercer and Cooley afterwards. My feeling on it is, if it only would have been the one fight, it would have been over. But the fact that there was a line brawl because of it, and how both teams were then shorthanded, and you see, like, you know, Luke Hughes playing 32 minutes and Nemec is up around 30, and, like, guys are just exhausted by the end of the game. And all that we're talking about, and I'm guilty of this too, like, I'm not putting myself on the outside of this one, like, I'm guilty here. We're talking a lot about this. what I think this does, like, this didn't close a chapter. Like, this reopened another chapter in the Devils and the New York Rangers. I almost feel like if it was just the one fight, then that issue would have been ended. But the fact that it was everybody on the ice and it's getting replayed over and over again and on programs like this and other programs, it's getting discussed and debated and chewed on and spat out. That just means that this thing is still as wide open as it was before we went into the game. Like, I look at this and I say, you know what was settled? Nothing. Nothing at all. If anything, this fire is still burning. Agree, disagree? Because even we had the coaches going back and forth.
I'm thinking about this on my feet. I don't know that I agree because, you know, we've seen line brawls before. Vancouver, Calgary was a pretty famous one, obviously. The Devils and the Rangers have had one before. The Rangers had one with the Capitals. And it doesn't mean you always have them, right? Like, I think you need a spark, some kindling. And this one had been sparking for some time. This was a perfect, you know, like, the one thing is, too, like, when you look at who was on the ice, you know, I kind of wasn't sure that everybody expected it to happen that way. Like, I'm not convinced John Marino is going to be on the ice if everybody knows that this is going to be the way it ends up. I'm not convinced the Trouba-Miller pair is going to be on the ice if everybody knows how this is going to end up. You know, like, to me, like, Goodrow, by going and pointing at Kevin Ball, and like, it was tough because, you know, the way it was shot, you kind of couldn't see how it all unfolded. But, you know, Goodrow backs away. I can't even remember who was taking the draw for New Jersey. Oh, it was Tierney, wasn't it?
Chris Tierney took the draw.
So Goodrow backs away from him, and then he goes for Ball. And then all of a sudden, it's more than one fight; it's several. I just don't get the impression that everybody here thought it was going to be a 5-on-5. And, you know, so, but the thing is, like, Jeff, we've seen these kinds of brawls before. We don't see them all the time anymore. And the other thing too is, like, good players got tossed out of that game.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Listen, Keandre Miller and Jacob Trouba punted. See you later.
Yeah.
Like, on both sides here. I mean, it's Marino, Cherny, Ball, McDermott, Rempe, Goodrow, Miller, Trouba are the ones that get punted here. The one thing that I do wonder about is, like, right away it seemed, because you caught it in the bottom of the screen. Like, as soon as that puck is dropped, Curtis Lazar makes a beeline. Like, right away, like, we're going at it right away with Jimmy Vesey.
Yeah,
like there was nothing sort of spontaneous about any of this. Everything, even all the secondary
fights. The only thing I wondered about
all of it, everybody knew.
Like, yeah, but I was wondering about Marino. Like, I was looking at it. Like, I was wondering about what that was going to mean. Yes, because I wasn't sure that Marino was really up for it at the beginning.
He wasn't, and there was that moment where him and Keandre Miller got separated, and he started moving backwards like, is that over? And Keandre Miller was like, oh, no, 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 no. This is not over yet. So here becomes one of the questions, and I threw this out on Twitter X, and there's a couple of humorous responses, some serious responses, a number of people saying Winnipeg and Minnesota, a lot saying Edmonton and Vegas. One person saying, and I think quite salient, the Florida Panthers versus whomever they're playing, they're becoming villains everywhere. Is this the most heated and maybe the best rivalry in hockey right now, the New Jersey Devils and the New York Rangers? Now, a couple of things here. Let's not forget, keeping in mind the context of this also includes the Devils beating the Rangers in the opening round last season. And then, of course, all the Matt Rempe stuff and what we saw yesterday. Is this the best rivalry in hockey right now?
It is. I would have to say yes, but because we don't have a playoff series coming up with them, I do think Edmonton-Vegas, if they play again, has the chance to pass it. I do. It's just because, right, I mean, obviously right now it's really hot. It's just too bad we don't get them in the postseason. But there's going to be something that happens in the playoffs that's going to set something off. There's no question about it. There's going to be something that happens in the postseason. Maybe the biggest rivalry right now is Tortorella versus the world.
Let me get to Tortorella. Okay, so I want to park the conversation and, you know, bracket the Devils and the New York Rangers, and we'll see where this thing heads. But the John Tortorella press conference yesterday was pretty interesting, and we talked about it towards the end of the program yesterday, and we played some of the audio about what Tortorella was talking about, so we sort of have a context for it. This was a passionate John Tortorella. This was a John Tortorella that I don't think, you know, unlike a lot of his pressers, I don't think that he went in there looking for let me put it this way. He went into that press conference yesterday not looking for confrontation, which sometimes John Tortorella does, and does it quite often. But instead of confrontation, he looked for conversation yesterday and had a really, really different sort of tone to it. It was still the emotional torts. It was still soundbite torts. But at the end of it, I think everybody walked away, if you listened to it or saw it, thinking, okay, now I get what John Tortorella is after here with the Philadelphia Flyers, especially when he started talking about, you know, this is BS. We're here. I don't want to hear about we're not supposed to be here. We're here, and we need to deal with that. What did you take away from Torts yesterday?
Look, I think he was trying to explain what he's doing. And, you know, someone asked me, like, do you think you could play for him? And I said that the one thing I thought that was really interesting is you see he doesn't have one-on-one meetings with people because I figure that would be obvious, right, that you would do that. And in this day and age, that's very hard to get away with. Like, a lot of people really like the one-on-one meetings. But someone asked me, could you play for him? And I said, absolutely I could, because I would always know where I stand. I'll take that over the opposite. And if I ever feel that somebody is going over the line with me, I just tell them. Now, I realize not, and I've always kind of been like, and I've always been like that, at least in my adult life anyway. Now, I realize not everybody is like that, and that's why you have to have guardrails and people who say, hey, this is a little much, and I bet you somebody wanted him to explain some things yesterday. But, you know, at the end of the day, results speak. And that team has overachieved, and a lot of their young players have gotten better. So you look at a lot of the obvious markers and you say, hey, something good is happening there. Now, if it's going over the line in certain places, like I said, you have to have guardrails against that. You have to protect against that. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of players who played for, like with Tortorella, it's white or black. You either really liked him or you really didn't like him. And but like for me, as long as someone told it to me straight, I wouldn't have a problem with that. And I think that the people internally who manage the team, whether it's Briere or Jones, they have to make sure that internally it's not going off the rails. Like, I would suspect that what has happened this year, some players have really enjoyed it and some players haven't. And, you know, the one thing I always worry about is whenever a coach is hard on a player publicly, it gives people a license to kind of say the same thing about the player. So I think you can't always coddle everyone. Sometimes you have to say things publicly, but that's the number one thing I think of. Like, as a player, if I'm going to be, or as a moderate public figure, if I'm going to be critiqued publicly, is it fair? And I think that's what the coach, like the thing with Samuelson that he had to apologize for, that wasn't fair. So that's the thing I always say with Tortorella is, if he's doing it publicly, is it fair? And if it's fair, I can deal with that. If it's not fair, then that's when I would have a problem with it.
Now, Philadelphia has put themselves in an awkward position here, being chased by the Washington Capitals, the other team closest to them. Huge game tonight, Washington Capitals and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Here we are in 2024, and we're talking about a meaningful game between Alexander Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby. What year is it again? But here we are, Penguins and Washington Capitals, here on a Thursday night. You have a thought on this one? Because
really,
with a win here, all of a sudden, the Pittsburgh Penguins pull themselves within 1 point of the Washington Capitals, Elliot. I'm stunned. Just stunned at this one.
Well, this is the time of year, Jeff, when I can't speak for all the voters, but during my time, I had a vote. This is the time you really start to shorten your list, right? Because you have to have your vote in by the first night of the playoffs, and that's 2 weeks Saturday. So you really have to know what you're doing. And so this is the time when I would start to really shorten my list and say, okay, who are the real serious contenders for these? And you know what? Guess who's making a very big case? Like, if Pittsburgh gets
Sidney Crosby.
If Pittsburgh gets in, it would not surprise me if he wins this.
See, I look at it as there's three camps when it comes to the Hart Trophy. There is, and again, I'm with you. If Sidney can do this, he may just win this whole thing if Crosby can pull this off. There's the Camp Crosby, which is pulling your team into the playoffs. I'm not going to say almost single-handedly. I'm just going to say single-handedly, because what Crosby is doing here is remarkable. There's that camp.
Yeah.
And then there's the jaw-dropping camp of, I can't believe they're putting up these points. And whether it's, you know, Connor McDavid now close to 100 assists, and he may win the Art Ross, or what Kucherov is putting up for points, and what Nathan MacKinnon is putting up for points, that's spectacular. And then there's the, and maybe I'll just call this the hipster camp, and that's where I'll put someone like Connor Hellebuck, for example. And by definition of the trophy, I can still make the argument, and always will, and I can already hear and see your eyes rolling in the back of your head. By definition of the trophy, it should always go to a goaltender. But those are the three camps that I see right now. But as far as, like, the one player most valuable to their team, if Crosby can do this, with that team and the team already making moves and throwing in the towel and all of it, it will be one of the most spectacular things we've seen in the last little while in hockey. I agree with you 100%.
I mean, it would be, if they got, I mean, we left them for dead, like a raccoon on the side of the road. Like, you know, like they were done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, like, there's a lot of, like, he's getting a lot of credit for tying the Gretzky record of 19 years at a point in the game, which is incredible. But to me, this is even bigger than that, because nobody would have a problem if he just said, you know what, we've given up. Okay, whatever. Maybe I'll go play for Canada at the Worlds. But he ain't doing that. Mm-hmm.
No, he's not. And we have a big one tonight. It is the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Washington Capitals. Let me rewind to yesterday. What do you take out of that Tampa-Toronto game, 4-1 for Tampa in this one?
Well, I was flying back from
I was flying back from
Winnipeg last night. So I saw a little bit of it, but not a ton. You know, I'll say this. If this is the Vasilevskiy we're getting in the playoffs, everybody's in trouble.
Oh, boy.
Like it took him a long time to get going. And right before the general manager's meeting, he had a game at home. I think it was in Florida or the other side of Florida against the Panthers, where they beat the Panthers and Florida outshot Tampa like 50-50. And there were a few managers who were at that game, and they were saying, you know, if that's him, we're in trouble. And then you watch that last night, you watch the way he's kind of started to play lately. And like, to me, that's what people are talking about after last night. I thought Toronto played reasonably well. I thought Vasilevskiy beat them. And, You know, I just think that he's sending a message, and it's not a good message unless you're a fan of the Lightning. But I got to tell you, the one I saw last night, and I was sitting here and saying, "Holy smokes!" was Dallas Edmonton.
Okay, let me get there.
Like,
okay, that's a good one. So
Dallas
now
is the deepest team in the league, and the biggest question all year has been the goalie, and if he's rounding into form too, everybody's in trouble.
So Jake Oettinger's got back-to-back shutouts. Yesterday it's 5-0 if you didn't tune in. And to Elliot's point too about, you know, I was making this point yesterday, Elliot, when you look at the Dallas Stars, and we've seen this before from Peter DeBoer, we also see this from Jim Montgomery, when the way that he runs his bench and the way that he measures off ice time amongst the forwards, no one's in single digits and no one gets more than 20. That's just the way that he runs things. It's a really balanced bench, and everyone's important, and everybody has their assignments, and everybody has their roles, etc. And if you look at the number of 20, and now we have one 30-goal scorer, and I want to get to Wyatt Johnson here in a second, but Jason Robertson has 27, Roope Hintz has 28, Joe Pavelski has 26, and Mason Marchman has 20, and Matt Duchene has 24, and Tyler Seguin's got 23, and Jamie Benn is one away from 20 himself, and Wyatt Johnston has 30 goals.
30 goals.
You know how we always talk? You know, we always talk about the 2017 draft for the Dallas Stars and how much that meant to this team and their future. That was one where they got Miro Heiskanen and Jake Oettinger and Jason Robertson. Those were their first three picks. I'm telling you, there's a moment. You and I think we talked about this on the podcast a while ago. In 2021, Jim Nell, in concert with his scouts, none of this is done in a vacuum here, swapped first-round picks with the Detroit Red Wings, okay? So originally, Dallas was going to select 15th, and they swapped with Detroit. Detroit was scheduled to pick 23rd. They swapped it, and they added a second-round pick, which they took Artem Grishnikov, who they turned into Chris Tanev. And the Detroit Red Wings took netminder Sebastian Kosa. That would have been their second pick in the first round.
Yep.
And the Dallas Stars took Wyatt Johnston. And then in the second round, they took Logan Stankoven. That piece of business between, I mean, it would have been Joe McDaniel, probably made the recommendation on that one. Between Jim Nell and the scouting staff, that is one of the best pieces of draft business we've seen for a long time. And now, second-year player Wyatt Johnston has 30 goals. He's 20 years old, and he leads the team in goals, Elliot. And this team is capital D deep right now.
Yes, they're the deepest team in the league. Top to bottom, 1 to 23, or whatever number you want to go to, they're the team. My question has been Oettinger, and he looked good. He's starting to look good. And you hope that this is the real deal and not just a positive blip, because if it is the real deal, Dallas can win the Stanley Cup. They're that good.
Yeah. Winners of 8 games in a row here. Real quick, only have a couple of minutes, but I wanted to ask you, and we'll do more on this on the podcast that'll come out tomorrow, but your piece with Michael Grange on Keith Pelly taking over MLSE, what should we keep top of mind as this transition has now taken place? And I should mention as well, for full transparency, Pelly and Scott Moore were the two that hired me to come to Sportsnet. So if you don't like me, blame them, by the way.
Well, I was going to say, I hope that how they run MLSE is better than that decision.
Again, if you don't like them, don't like me, blame them, not me.
You know, first of all, I want to say that Michael deserves most of the credit. He did most of the work on that piece. I did some. He did the lion's share of it. You and I have both worked for Keith, obviously. He's been around a long time. Yeah. He is a presence. And in the last few years, ever since, like Tim Leiwicki, he is a presence. And after Tim Leiwicki was out, Michael Friesdahl he liked being in the background. Cynthia Devine, mm-hmm. who was the interim CEO after Friesdahl was out, she preferred to be in the background. She didn't want the job on a permanent basis. And so even though, and I think also because of what happened with Ujiri publicly during his contract negotiations, he lost a lot of trust in the board, and he wanted to deal with Larry Tannenbaum only. Now, Brendan Shanahan, from what I understand, was a little different. He, as it's mentioned in the piece, and I had a few people mention this to me, Lou Lamoriello, when he runs a team, he's the boss, but he believes in chain of command. He would, anyone who was above him on the organizational list, he believed it was, I'm not going to ask you for permission, but I'm going to tell you what we're going to do or what we're thinking. And Shanahan, right, since he was above Lamoriello on the chart, he appreciated that. He liked that. And he continued to do that. Even though he had the ability to talk to the board directly, he would inform people. So I don't necessarily think that this is going to be a big change for Shanahan. I don't know enough about, I'm not around you, Jerry. I don't know enough about it. But Michael, who knows the situation better than I do, says it will be a bit of a change. But I think the thing is, like, what are Pelly's plans? You know him. I know him. He doesn't come into places to just, you know, sit around, drink tea, and hit the driving range.
No.
Like, he's...
No.
He has a vision. And I think we're all curious to see what the vision is going to be.
I encourage everyone to read this piece. Michael Grange and Elliot Friedman on Keith Pelly taking over MLSE. Okay, on that, we'll wrap. We'll talk to you later on today for the next edition of 32 Thoughts, the podcast. So enjoy the remainder of the afternoon without me until I bother you again.
Speak to you later, man.